Oh, it is Christ in us. That's fabulous. Did you ever think about what your purpose is here on this earth? Tonight, today, this afternoon, just for a little bit, we're going to be talking about purposeful giving. But just for a moment, think about some things in the Word that you know, some verses, and think about what God's purpose is. Why did He make us sons? Why did He put Christ in us? Why did He give us the power of the Holy Spirit? Just think for a second. I was just thinking that a really beautiful answer, which is described in this chapter in 2 Corinthians 9 that we're going to be looking at today, is that our purpose is to glorify God. Everything He has given us and everything He did for us by putting Spirit within us is so that we could glorify Him. And that's really the answer of the entire thing. So I could just go ahead and sit down if you want. That giving, the purpose of giving is to glorify God too. So it's just one aspect of our lives. But it's a really fabulous time, I think, that we've had to be able to look at this subject and to consider some different aspects of it. Today I want to talk about the applications of how we can trust God in this particular category, and we're going to finish looking at the rest of chapter 9 in 2 Corinthians. So you can open there. And we're going to start in verse 7. Every man, according as he purposeth in his heart, so let him give. Not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. I mean, last time we were talking about the joyous giver, the hilarious, joyful, cheerful giver, right? Well, now I want to just take a look at that phrase about every man according as he purposeth in his heart. The word purpose there is a really interesting word. And, you know, many people use this verse as a little bit of an excuse about how they should or shouldn't give. Well, I'm purposing to put $10 in the Horn of Plenty as it comes around today. That's my purpose. You go, okay, well, that is exactly what God says, is that we have the right to choose. This word purpose literally means to choose before or choose beforehand. But I found a really wonderful secondary definition to this idea of purposing, and it means to bring forth or to bring forward from one's stores. Like, I have a bank account. You have a bank account?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's like your storage for your money, right? So when I write a check, San Diego Biblical Studies, whatever it is, I am bringing forth out of my stores, right? So that's a different angle of this idea of purposing than just that it's I decide or I make up my own mind. It says that we are to purpose in his heart. We are to bring forth out of one's stores in your heart what your heart says. Okay, so that's really where the key is not so much in the decision-making idea of it. It's to really have our hearts lined up with God's heart. And when that's the case and we go to Him and say, Father, what should I give? How should I give? Where should I give? We line our hearts up with God's purposes. Then He does that little nudge, you know. Hey, what about this? Hey, what about that? This is where you could give here. And it becomes really easy then because it's not my decision or my purposing. It's the purposing part of it is that I have to actually write the check, okay? But it's lining up my heart with God's heart, and then the purposes join together. The neat part of this verse, see that phrase, so let him give, is in italics, right? It's in italics in your Bible, right? Okay. That means that it's not there in the text. And it's implied. So there is no verb here. It says, every man, according as he purposeth in his heart, blank. And when there's a blank like that, it's the figure of speech ellipsis. And the emphasis in that figure of speech is on the missing word. And you need to figure out what that missing word is from the context. So you go back and you see that the whole context of this section is about the sowing and reaping. Sowing bountifully, right? Which we also talked about last week. So that's really what you're supposed to put in here. Every man, according as he purposeth in his heart, sow bountifully, not grudgingly or of necessity. See how that fits? So it's not even just general giving. It's talking about sowing bountifully in this whole section. And that's the purpose. It's like to get to the place where God's heart is that we have an abundance that we can share with everyone who's the poor, remember, or who has need. So, but it's supposed to be bountifully, generously, joyously, not grudgingly, right? So those are all God's purposes. So next time you read this verse, don't put the emphasis on the purposing part. Put the emphasis on heart and sow. Sow. How? Sow bountifully. And then, of course, there's this wonderful promise in verse 8. We'll just read it again. God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you always having all sufficiency in all things may abound to every good work. And remember last week, too, I was showing you that there the emphasis is on abound, increase. God's purpose, why he even set up and he's told us that we should give, is so that we could increase and we could abound and he could pour out his grace. So as we go along here, you're going to see how this kind of is a summary of all the things we've been talking about. Because the first lesson, the first session was on grace. God owns everything, we own nothing. It's all grace. He gives you grace, you have to receive first, then you can open up your hand, right? Okay. Abounding to every good work. And those good works are to help take care of the poor, to help take care of things that are in the family. This is a family business that we're in, and we're workers together with God. And we're all part of the family. So we all have certain needs, and we all have areas where people need to give to us. Then also we need to turn around and give. And how we should give is bountifully. All right, so that's that wonderful promise. Now let's look at verses 9 and 10. Because you see it's a parenthesis, right? So the parenthesis is going to explain all the things that came before and give us a little clue about how we're to do this kind of purposeful, thoughtful giving from out of our storehouses. Verse 9, as it is written, he hath dispersed abroad, he hath given to the poor, his righteousness remains forever. Now he that ministereth seed to the sower, both minister bread for your food, and multiply your seed sown, and increase the fruits of your righteousness. Okay, that's the parenthesis. As it is written. So when you see that, you go, where is it written? And it's written in Psalm 112 is where this is written. But let's just look at these two verses. They basically show the nature of the purposing, or the nature of what we need to have in our hearts. He says, he hath dispersed abroad. Now, this is still in the context of sowing. So the word dispersed there means scattered. Like they had, when the farmer would sow the seed in a field, they didn't have, you know, big tractors that just put the seeds all in a row. They had a little bag that they held across their shoulder that had the seed in it. And so as they were walking down the rows, they would scatter the seed like this. So you scatter it. And so it's not as a precise a method of farming, right? So you can see that it's very important the amount of seed that you're scattering. Because if you only just take a tiny little handful and throw it down, there's not necessarily going to be a whole lot of plants that are going to spring up there. You want to make it as consistent and as full as possible. So it'd be like taking the seeds out, scatter, taking the seeds out, scatter, taking the seeds out, scatter. So it's, that's how you sow abundantly, is it's a dispersing abroad. And that has the idea of this liberality or generosity. And you could see that pretty easily in the whole sowing analogy. Sarah and I were planting lettuce seeds the other day. There's a tiny, tiny, tiny little seeds, and it says, you know, plant them 6 inches apart. And I'm going, yeah, right. You know, take 3 seeds and put them in here and then put them 6 inches apart. You can't even get 3 of those tiny little seeds in your hand, let alone plant them. And then once you plant them, you don't remember where you planted them, right? So I said, hey, let's just take the bag and just throw it. And that's actually going to pop up a whole lot of lettuce plants. And then I'll be able to separate them out and let the really healthy ones grow and stuff. But it was the point was, if I wanted lettuce to grow, I couldn't be stingy about finding one tiny little seed and sticking it somewhere and then not even remembering where it was anyway. So that's the scattering part. Now it says, he is given to the poor. His righteousness remains forever. And in the quotation, we're not going to look at it. You can go look at it yourself. But the word righteousness there in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew and in Aramaic, you can also translate as almsgiving. It was righteous to give alms to the poor. So there's an element there about this purposeful giving. Your thoughtfulness is that it's giving alms to the poor. It's a benefit to others. And the righteousness, what it means there, it's kind of an odd phrase to be stuck there. It's like, what do you mean your righteousness remains forever? Of course it remains forever. God made us righteous, right? But if you translate it almsgiving, which is what it should be, or giving, your giving remains forever, meaning that once you sow it, it starts bearing fruit, and then that produces more seeds, and then it just goes on and on and on. It's like a ripple thing. It remains forever. The giving keeps going, like the Energizer Bunny or something, you know, just going and going and going. It goes on, and the ripples don't stop. As long as we don't stop the flow, it continues on. Isn't that a beautiful explanation of what the scattering is and the sowing bountifully? Now, look at verse 10 again. There's a very key word in there that is a beautiful word. It says, now he that ministereth seed to the sower. Who's the he? Who's ministering seed to the sower? God, right. The word minister there is, it means to lead up the chorus. It's a very emphatic word in this section. It signifies somebody who leads a chorus. You even get the Greek word chorus is where we get our English word. The Greek word is epichoragon. A chorus needs somebody to lead it. And in this case, he's explaining and saying that God is the one who leads the chorus. So I wanted to read you just an excerpt from Clark's commentary on the Bible. He wrote this somewhere between 1810 and 1826. To lead the chorus means to join to associate, to supply or furnish one thing after another so that there would be no want or chasm. Thus God is represented, listen to this, okay. God is represented in the course of his providence, associating and connecting causes and effects, keeping everything in its proper place and state of dependence on one another and all upon himself, so that summer, winter, heat and cold, seed time and harvest regularly succeed each other. Thus God leads up this grand chorus of causes and effects. He provides the seed to the hand of the sower. that he gives him skill to discern the times when the earth should be prepared for the grain and when the grain should be sowed. He blesses the earth. He causes it to bring forth and bud so that it may again minister seed to the sower and bread to the eater. And by a watchful providence, he preserves everything. The figure is beautiful and shows us the grand system of causes and effects, all directed by and under the immediate guidance and government of God himself. He's the grand chorus leader. He's making sure that we have seed. He tells us how to plant it, where to plant it, when to plant it, everything about it. He's the one that causes it to increase. He's the one that causes it to grow and produce and multiply so that we have more seed for the next harvest. It's awesome. He's the grand chorus leader. So that's what that word minister there is. Now, he that ministers or leads the chorus, he provides seed to the sower, and he ministers bread for your food, and he multiplies your seed sown, and increases the fruits of your almsgiving, of your righteousness. There's three different sections in there. Everything is about God. He's the one, right? It's like there's a pattern. The seed yields something, then it multiplies, and then it increases. And those verbs there are, they are a buildup. You know, they go from one to the other. You have to start somewhere, right? You have to have that first seed. So God is always the one who gets the glory, but because you, if you have any seed to give, it came from him. But then he's the one that causes it to multiply, to bring forth the plant. Do we make plants to grow? No. All we do is stick them in the ground. That's the analogy that's so beautiful here. The same thing with giving. Do we give, and that's the reason why we get blessings and have our needs met? No, God is the one who causes those things to happen, just like he causes a plant to grow. And then, like last week I was talking about, you know, the apples. You can count the seeds in an apple, but how many seeds does one apple tree produce? That's how we have to look at our giving. It's not just my measly little $10 or my $100 or whatever. It's not about me. It's about God. And he takes that and he multiplies it. And he causes it not only to grow, but then to increase. So that's the third thing. It spreads. So we have these same ideas as of this rippling effect that goes on and on with the giving. So those are those two verses. Now, verse 11. I found this really great quote. It said, wealth is given with a view to generosity. The reason why we should have wealth of any kind or prosperity of any kind is so that we can be generous. And that's what it says in verse 11. Being enriched in everything to all bountifulness, which causes through us thanksgiving to God. We are enriched in any way, no matter what happens. When you get blessings in your life, you're being enriched by God. And the purpose of it is so that we can be more generous to all bountifulness, so that it keeps going more, so that it keeps going farther. That's the purpose of being enriched in everything. And then the second purpose is to give thanksgiving to God. It causes thanksgiving to God. And I think that if you look at this idea of thanksgiving, you could do a whole teaching just on being thankful to God. And we're going to read the rest of the verses. There's like four times where it's talking about how thankfulness goes to God. Thankfulness should go to God. Thankfulness is to God. But I was thinking about it. It's like, the thankfulness is the barometer to know whether you are trusting God or not. Because if it's causing thankfulness, you're thankful. The person you're giving it to is thankful. It produces more thankfulness. It's just like the thankfulness thing is what gets multiplied. If that's happening, then you're doing the giving correctly. If it's not happening, then there's something all through here that you could go over and think now. You know, am I really counting that everything I have is owned by God? You can go through the steps. Am I being grudging? Or think I have to do this? You can go through a lot of the things that we have been talking about and see. Because if we're doing it right, it just is mucho thankfulness. So let's go ahead and read the rest of that section. For the administration of this service not only supplies the wants of the saints, but is abundant also by many, what? Thanksgivings unto God. Whilst by the experiment of this ministration, they glorify God for your professed subjection unto the gospel of Christ and for your liberal distribution unto them and unto all men. What he's describing is what we were talking about before. The Macedonians and the Achaeans, they had gathered together a bounty, a blessing for the saints in Jerusalem. And Paul was going to bring and have these other two guys, Titus and his brother, bring it to meet the needs of the saints in Jerusalem. So when they got it, he's saying what's going to happen is they're going to go, oh, this is so cool. Those guys love us. This is amazing. People that we don't even know live way over there in Greece. And they're given to us. Wow. Wow. And so God gets the glory. They would glorify God. Verse 14, and by their prayer for you, which long after you for the exceeding grace of God in you. So their response, the person receiving the gift, their response is a prayer saying, oh God, will you pour out more grace to those people? Because look at what they did. They took of their stores, they purposed in their heart, and they opened their hands and they gave it to me. So I would really be blessed if you would do that promise that you were talking about, you know. God would make all grace abound toward them. So it becomes a prayer on the part of the receiver as well. Verse 15, thanks be unto God for his unspeakable gift. Because he was the original giver. He ministered the gift to begin with, the seed to begin with. And so then it started this whole wonderful process. Now that whole illustration of the sower and the seed is often also misused to, you know, say that, oh, take your seed. Remember, I was holding up this is my $10, this is my seed, I'm going to plant it in your church. Well, it's not the problem with having the seed, okay, or giving it at all. It's the idea that if you are planting a seed, that the purpose of it is for you to get this gigantic harvest so that you can use it for your own consumption. It's not, God wants us to have a harvest, right? But the purpose of the harvest is so we can be enriched in everything to give more to others. If I have a huge bountiful harvest of lettuce, I can't possibly eat all that lettuce. So I'm going to take the lettuce and I'm going to give it to other people. That's the point. It causes thanksgiving to God and gives glory to God. Now, look over at Luke chapter 6, because this is also a very common verse that we all know, and I just wanted to look at it today, and I gave you a paper that's an article by a man named James Neal, and the book is called Palestine Explored. And when he was living in Israel, it was the early 1900s, and they still had many customs of things that were the same as in the Bible times. So he saw these guys who were called measurers, and they were measuring the grain whenever there was a harvest. And so he learned this wonderful thing about the measure. So this is Luke 6:38. It says, give and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaking together and running over shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that you meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. Now, if you see the context of this whole section, it's not only talking about giving or money. It's talking about not judging, you know, back in verse 37, judge not that you be not judged. You know, if you have mercy, you're going to get mercy. Forgive, don't condemn, or else, you know, you're going to get condemned. Because with the same measure that you meet, you're going to get back to you. It's a principle that God set up. So what we need to do is to understand what this measure is. So if you look at your picture there, you see this little guy. He's the measurer. He's a wheat measurer, all right? And he's sitting down, and he has this kind of a wooden box that was called a timnah. And you can read the whole article. But when they would come to sell the grain, they would pour the grain into the measure, right? And then he would press it down, and then he'd shake it several times so that the grain settles, right? Then you pour more grain in there. So you get it so the grain is up to the top and level. But not, it didn't, that wasn't the whole thing. It was to continue to make this little cone. See that little cone in the picture? Where it comes to a point, and he would pat it down and keep adding the wheat in there until it gets to a point. And pretty soon, after a while, you can't put even a few more kernels onto the top of the cone because they'll overflow. And they'll just fall away. That's the overflowing. So press down, shake together, keep filling it, then make this little cone to where it gets to where it's just, you can't possibly put another little grain of wheat in there. That's a good measure. That's the kind of measure that it's talking about here. And on the back, you can read the rest of the story. At the very last paragraph, it's saying, because he was so curious about this, like, what's the difference with having just a regular flat measure, you know, fill it to the top? We would think that that was a good measure, right? Fill to the top. But the difference between the amount of wheat that you can get, if you just fill it into the top, and if you do that little cone thing and really press it down, is about 11 pounds. And so he figured out the percentage of what that would be if you did a good measure, as it's talking about, like this. It would be that it would be no less than about 30% added to the amount. 30% more than what we would just think of as a good measure. So next time you hear this, ask yourself a question. Say, what is your standard? What is the measure that you are using for your giving? Because I was thinking about just a really practical example of this. With what measure you use is how it's going to be measured to you again. So if we want to have abundance flowing back to us, then we have to use a good measure. And just let's just say, I wanted to give $10. We'll use the $10 again. I think, oh, I'm purposing in my heart. I'm going to give $10. I purposed it beforehand. This is what I'm choosing. This is what I want to do. And you're really, you know, you got the whole thing down with the cheerful giving, everything, right? And then God go, hey, if you really want a good measure, why don't you add 30% to that? And just tack on a couple more bucks, $3. That's not that much. Just tack on a little bit more so that it becomes that good measure, pressed down, shaking together, overflowing measure. It does something in our hearts to do that. It releases that whole thing of, okay, it's great, I purpose. But now, let me just do a little bit more. Let me just think, if I use this really good measure, then it's going to get measured back to me in that same way. Look at Obadiah. This is where Jesus got this parable from. Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. It's this little tiny book in here. Amos, Obadiah, Jonah. There we go. Obadiah 1:5. That's not the right verse. Okay, well, I'd have to look it up again, but the verse in Obadiah is that as you have done it, it will be done to you. Which verse? 15. Okay, there we go. For the day of the Lord is near upon all the heathen. As thou hast done, it shall be done unto thee. Thy reward shall return upon thine own head. It's a principle that God set up. And that's the reason why if we want to line up our hearts with God's heart, then we have to not look at the logical thing that if I give something away, I'm going to be depleted. I'm going to be less if I give something away. It's not the way God did it, and it is not logical. But if we line up our purposes with God's purposes and know that when we release it and we are liberal in our releasing, we're scattering, we're accounting that God is in charge of everything, we're listening to Him, then we can do that good measure, press it down, shake it together, and it will come back. Anybody who's ever done this kind of purposeful giving on a consistent basis can tell you story after story about how there's no way that they ever lost anything by their giving. I read another really cool quote about giving. It was doing this kind of adding to what you decide you are going to give. Like if you decide that you're going to tithe and you use that percentage, there's nothing wrong with that. Because it's a barometer too. It's a way to start. So say you decided that you're giving 10%, but then you do this additional thing. It's like the tithe is like training wheels for a career of ever-growing Christian giving. Pretty soon, after you've been tithing for a long time and you've seen the results over and over, you take the training wheels off. Because it's just a part of your life, and you've proved God over and over and over that He is so faithful to do that stuff about pouring out grace to you, that you just want to do it more. I found a really beautiful site that you can go look at on the internet. It's called generousgiving.org. And there's all kinds of articles in there, and testimonies, and also just really great Bible teaching about generosity, what the tithe is, all sorts of things. And there's one little section in there that's the guy who put this all together summarized all the principles of giving that he had come up with. And this is one of them, that you have proportional, consistent giving. If it's not just like, okay, we'll get to the end of the year and we'll go, okay, well, I haven't given all year long, so I'm just going to give one big gift. I'll show you why it says that. 1 Corinthians 16. If you give consistently and proportionately, then it gets increased. 1 Corinthians 16. Verse 2. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God hath prospered him, that there be no gatherings when I come. And when I come, whomsoever you shall approve by your letters, them will I send to bring your liberality unto Jerusalem. So he's still talking about this collection. They were to lay aside the money that they wanted to give. What they would purpose, right? They were to lay it aside and keep it in store so that then when the time was for giving, then you give it. That's part of the thoughtfulness that it takes. Yeah, it's a funny example, but I've seen people come to meetings where they really had wanted to give. They were thinking about giving, and they go, oh, gee, I forgot my checkbook. Oh, so sorry. You know, so that's part of the thoughtfulness, right? Is you have to plan. You have to think through. You have to say, well, however you give, you know, if you go and do it like an online bill or you go through PayPal and make a donation to anybody, it doesn't matter where, you have to think through how are you going to do it. There's a process. And there's a preparation involved with it. Otherwise, it's real easy to get talked out of it. Oh, just do it next week. That's okay. All right. Now, so we so far have talked about purposeful giving and then consistent giving. And now I just want to briefly talk about sacrificial giving. So look over at Philippians chapter 4. And this kind of brings us full circle around to where we started. Because we started in Philippians 4 in the first session about how Paul was talking about receiving and giving because he desired that fruit would abound to their account. But look at verse 18. But I have all and abound. I am full, having received of Epaphroditus the things which were sent from you, an odor of a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable, well-pleasing to God. And then it goes, but my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Christ Jesus. He's talking about how when he received the gift from the Philippians, he received it from this man, Epaphroditus. And what Epaphroditus had to do was excuse me. Epaphroditus lived in Philippi. Paul was in Rome in captivity at this time. Yeah, please, thank you. The Philippians had wanted to give a gift to Paul, so they arranged it and they sent Epaphroditus to Rome to bring the gift to Paul. It wasn't like our day and time where they could just, you know, write a check or mail it. There was a big process that had to happen. They had to foot the bill for Epaphroditus to make the entire trip to Rome. He stayed there for a long time. He ministered to Paul. And during that process, he even got sick because of the traveling and whatever else he was doing. It describes it at the beginning of Philippians, how Epaphroditus got sick. So it was not just a small thing. It required planning and preparation and sacrifice on the part of Epaphroditus, but also on the part of the Philippians. So what Paul is acknowledging here is that it's like a sweet smell, a sacrifice acceptable. Just like an offering would be when they offered sacrifices on the altar. God would have the, it would be like a sweet smell to God. Because they knew, because God knew that what it would take, what it took to bring the offering there. Oh, thank you. So giving often requires a kind of planning and preparation and some sacrifice. Sometimes I guess we think of sacrifice like it's some really negative thing, but it isn't. It's just that you have to go out of your way to think things through. You have to go out of your way to be concerned about something, to open your eyes and see where a need is, to open your heart, to listen to God. Those kinds of things require a sacrifice of our own personal ideas. I could take all the money that I get and earn and I could spend it all on myself or my family, right? So there's a certain amount of sacrifice that can happen. Remember the widow who put in her two mites? And Jesus says that she is going to be greatly rewarded for that. And but the Pharisees who were watching, they were giving, right? Why were they not acknowledged like that their giving was important? It's because it really wasn't done with that same kind of heart, like we talked about heart giving, right? The widow put in everything she had. Her sacrifice was really huge in comparison. So it's not, you know, that I'm standing up here going, now you should do this and you should do that, and pointing fingers at anybody or any one of us. I'm pointing fingers back at me and going, hey, Jan, where's your sacrifice? Like I said, I've been tithing for a very long time. I've seen really tremendous results. I want to move it to the next level. I want to have that abundance that it's been talking about. I want to see this overflowing harvest and have more seed to be able to give. Not so I can use it. I don't need anything. I really do. I have all in abound. That's what Paul was talking about. I have everything and I'm abounding. But I want to be able to see it abounding so we can, you know, pour out giving to all kinds of situations. Other ministers who need help. People that are hurting, even, you know, among our communities, our neighbors. The body has needs. And in order to fulfill them, we need to have resources. So to summarize, we've been talking about trusting. Okay, there's this really great book. If you haven't had a chance to read it yet, it's called Those Who Trust the Lord Shall Not Be Disappointed. It's by a lady named Peggy Joyce Ruth. And it's a lot of testimonies in here about how she learned how to trust God. And the reason I wanted to call this whole series Trusting God Regarding Giving and Receiving is because of reading this book. And she uses Psalm 22:5 as the basis of what God showed her. And we'll just look at that briefly here. Psalm 22:5. It says, they cried unto thee and were delivered. They trusted in thee and were not confounded. The word confounded means to be disappointed or to be put to shame. So her premise, and it's very, very simple. It's kind of like the same thing I was talking about with the barometer of thanksgiving. There's another barometer that we can use is that if there's an area specifically regarding our finances where we are either ashamed, disappointed, confounded, or disconcerted in any way, then there's something in there where we're not trusting God. Because it's a promise. It says, if we trust God, we will not be disappointed. So take a checkup from the neck up. Just like I've been doing and been talking about, it's really helped me to review not only my heart about giving and things like that, but also the motivation of why do I give? You know, where am I giving? How can I listen to God more? How can I trust God more in this situation, in this particular category? Like I was saying, where we could really see abundance happen. God will fulfill his promises. Remember, he's the great chorus director, okay? And those who trust in him will never be disappointed. One more verse, Jeremiah 17. I'm really thankful for the privilege of being able to share all these things with you, and my prayer at this point is that we can continue to learn more even in this category, and we can see not only more results, but we can see deliverance, that we help each other. We are a family, and so let's share with each other. Let's talk with each other. Let's Talk about where our needs are or where we are disappointed. And if we are, then let's look at it and figure out what we can do about it. Because we're to help each other. It's a body. It's a family, right? So Jeremiah 17, verse 7 says, "Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord and whose hope the Lord is. For he shall be as a tree planted by the waters and that spreadeth out her roots by the river and shall not see when heat cometh. But her leaf shall be green and shall not be careful in the year of drought, neither shall cease from yielding fruit." There, you know, that kind of refers to the other verse in Psalm 1 about you shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth her fruit in its season. If we plant our roots really deep in God's word and we do things the way God has exhorted us to do them, then it will bring tremendous thanksgiving everywhere around, but the thanksgiving will go back to God. Because the beautiful, beautiful tree and with all this luscious fruit is what we'll see, and the glory will go to God. So that's my prayer, and I sure love you, and thank you.